questions? Yeah. Okay. So you're saying, like, to be a bodhisattva, to practice well and serve others, it is beneficial if others have a good opinion of you and think you're reliable and trustworthy, and you can't really act as a good bodhisattva and help others if they don't trust you. It would be more difficult. That's very true. But there's a difference between having a good reputation and being attached to having one. Okay? There's a difference between, you know, having a bad reputation and finding it very disagreeable having one. So the thing is that we want to act well, okay? We want to act well, first of all, for our own karma. Second of all, if you're practicing a bodhisattva path, definitely, if you really sincerely care for others, you do want them to have a good opinion of you, not because you're attached to them having a good opinion of you, but because it helps them if they do. Okay? Right. It's completely your motivation. So you can have a good reputation and you can seek to act in a way in which other people will think well of you, but not because you're attached to it. Okay? Make sense? Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and our motivation, our meditation is really that time to shine that mirror and ask ourselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? And sometimes it's not real clear. Yeah? And sometimes we'll get very mixed motivations. We'll have a good motivation and a lousy one at the same time. Or we'll flip back and forth doing a good one and a bad one. And so at that time, it's really beneficial to notice that, you know, when we're flipping back and forth or when we're combining it. And then really try and apply the techniques to free ourselves of the bad motivation and develop the beneficial one. And sometimes it won't even happen. It'll happen that we won't even be able to look at our own behavior and know our motivation until years later. Yeah? Sometimes we're doing something, we think we're doing it for a certain reason. Next year we look back on it and say, I was really, you know, pulling the wool over my own eyes. But that's okay. We don't need to get down on ourselves when that happens. But it is good, you know, keep shining that mirror and, you know. Yeah. Well, I think this is the benefit. I mean, the thing is, it's like when you were very aware of death at this time of when a dear family member could have died, and it really helped you tune in very much more, it sounds like, to that person, to your whole family, to your life. And yet when the crisis subsides, so does your awareness, and you're kind of back to the old habits. So this, you know, the antidote to that is to continually reflect on transience and death. Yeah? And that we're going to get into it's called the nine-round death meditation, nine-point death meditation. And that's a very, very good way of maintaining that vividness to the feeling of the preciousness of our life. Yeah. Yeah, so it seems to me there's a few things there. You know, what you just said is how to be open to some criticism and be able to put it in its place, and how not to get overwhelmed by unbeneficial criticism. Right, to change their own self-image because they've internalized all the criticism they've gotten. And see, this is where I think really from the time we're very young, be helpful to teach kids, you know, and adults, every time we're criticized, let's just stop and let's reflect on our own behavior. Okay? Did I do that? Now, if I did it, okay, maybe I have to say, yes, I did it, but is it all that horrible of a thing that I did it? Okay, so we have to look, okay, my punctuation was terrible, but does that mean I'm a horrible person? Does that mean I'm a hopeless writer because my punctuation is terrible? No, it just means I need to do more work on my punctuation. You see, what we do is we get this much criticism and we generalize it and start telling ourselves a whole other story and create a whole self-identity on the basis of that much criticism. And I think this is really where this ability to evaluate things realistically comes in. Okay? So our punctuation is terrible. So our sentence structure is terrible. So our essays get all marked up with red pen. You should have seen what Steve did to Open Heart, Clear Mind. You know, there's more red pen than black ink on the paper when he got done. But does that mean I'm a lousy writer? Okay.
No.
Does that mean that we're horrible people? Does that mean that we're beyond hope? Does that mean that we're a failure and our family's never going to be pleased with us and that we can't do anything right and that we're a total catastrophe and that there's no basis for any kind of self-respect simply because our punctuation is wrong? Right. Now, sometimes, you know, when people give criticism, they give it with this whole extra added thing. But do we have to believe it? Okay, well, there's two things that are going on. First of all, we have to know what to do with the criticism internally. Then we have to know how to deal with the person who's criticizing externally. You need both those factors. Because if you don't deal with it, with the effect of the criticism internally, but you just try and stop the person who's criticizing you, you're still believing what they're saying. You're still internalizing it, only you're letting all your anger out on them. Or somewhere else. And it's all your fault. It's all the world's fault. It's all these people's fault because they're telling me and they're criticizing me, blah, 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 blah. The real issue is I'm believing what they're saying. So the big thing is first we have to work with that part of us that hates ourselves. And then we need to think about how to deal with the other person who's doing whatever they're doing. But if we don't look at that part of ourself that beats up on ourself, then even if the other person stops criticizing us, we'll take over. It isn't a thing of do I internalize the criticism or do I throw it away. It's let's look at the information that this person is sharing and let's see if there's anything I can learn from it. If somebody is, you know, if one person is sitting there and telling me that I'm a completely horrible nun and I keep my vows like it's a catastrophe and I'm a very bad example, and I sit there and I look at my own behavior and I go through my list of vows and I think, well, I keep them moderately well, not perfectly, you know, but I kind of do well within the boundaries and I can kind of look at my behavior and there's room for improvement, but I'm not a total catastrophe, then that's what's important, not what this person says about me. Exactly. Exactly. That's the whole thing of we need to evaluate ourselves. And if this criticism, you know, can be useful to ourselves, if it describes something we're doing, then use it to improve ourselves. If it doesn't help us at all, then we don't need to take it to heart and just leave it by the way. Right. But you can't do that unless you first look and see if what they said had any relevance. If we just blanket, dismiss any criticism, then we've fallen into this thing of aversion to blame, aversion to criticism, and we become completely closed-minded, and nobody can give us any negative feedback at all because we're so sensitive and easily offended. And we don't listen to anybody. Yeah? So it's really the thing of, you know, I mean, it's very interesting, I find, you know, when people start criticizing me, my instant reaction is, and then I kind of go, okay, I'm going to sit here and listen to them. Yeah? I'm just going to open the doorway and let them criticize, let them give me some information. And they might tell me something that's interesting and that's useful for me. And they're also telling me a lot about themselves and how they're seeing things. And that will help me know how to relate to them better. So that's what I try and do. Because our usual thing is when we hear criticism, walk around, turn away, throw it back on the other person, yell, shut it out, anything but hear it. And I find that it's kind of easier if I just say, well, I'm just going to try and listen and see if there's something that I can learn from in here. And even if there's nothing I can learn from in here, this person is another living being, and what they're saying is giving me information about the problem that they're having right now, which is something I do need to take into consideration. Okay? Somebody might be blaming me for bungling a whole blah, 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 or blaming me because they think I'm arrogant and proud and da, 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 da. And I might look and say, well, I didn't bungle that, and I don't really feel like I'm being arrogant and proud. But I still have to pay attention to this person feels I'm arrogant and proud. And so how can I talk to this person to help them understand that maybe they were looking at the situation and interpreting this, but actually I was meaning something else. So still it's worthwhile to listen because still, you know, if our relationship with that person is important, what they say is something to be listened to. It doesn't mean we have to believe all of it.
But try and protect yourself.
It's try and not to be so attached to the praise and not to have so much aversion for the criticism. It's not a thing of protecting yourself. Somebody else's criticism can't hurt you. Their criticism is only words. Our internalization of the criticism, our believing it, is what harms us, not their criticism. And the more sensitive we are to criticism, it's indicative of the more attached we are to praise. So these same people that you're talking about that are internalizing all this bad stuff they're getting, when the same person, like you gave the example of battered women, then comes along and says, oh dear, you're so ravishing tonight. She's on cloud nine, you know? So it's a thing of attachment and aversion, these two opposites really go very much together. You can't say, let's get rid of the aversion to criticism, but let's hang on to the attachment to praise. Because as long as you have one, you're going to have the other.
I have a question about that, and that is that in all these support groups, say, for example, with battered women, there's a real effort to build up a woman in this situation,
mm-hmm.
and say, you're a valuable human being.
Mm-hmm.
And we consider you important, and you deserve better than you become.
Mm-hmm.
Is that attachment to praise? If she listens to it and says, yes, I am a good person, and I deserve better?
I don't think that's attachment to praise.
So what is that then?
If she starts thinking, I'm a good person, I deserve better, who are these people thinking they're doing that? That's, you know, just going on another extreme. But if you look and you get in touch with your basic human dignity and you say, yes, I'm a human being like every other human being, and I don't need to beat up on myself, and I don't need to let other people beat up on me because I beat up on myself. Because we won't let other people beat up on ourselves if we don't beat up on ourselves. Yeah. So it's a thing of, you know, it's not just getting whoever it is who's beating the woman to stop, it's getting her to stop hating herself at the same time. So developing a sense of a balanced sense of self-confidence, that's what it's all about. And to get that balanced sense of self-confidence, you need to get rid of the attachment to the praise and the aversion to the blame. Okay? Saying, I am a valuable human being, I'm alive, I have the Buddha nature, I have inner qualities, I have a precious human life, you know, I have a basis to have a happy life and to do something useful for society, that's completely in tune with reality. Saying, I am wonderful, I am fantastic, I have to have the best of everything, I have to be treated like royalty, and everybody has to appreciate me and tell me how wonderful I am. That kind of attitude is poison. So it's a thing of looking in our own mind and being sensitive. What is our attitude about ourselves? Do we have a balanced, reliable sense of self-confidence which won't be disturbed by other people's criticism? Or do we have an unreliable sense of self-confidence that is based on being attached to nice words people say to us and consequently being overwhelmed when we get blamed for something? Okay, and that's why I keep coming back to, we have to be able to look at ourselves and know ourselves and be able to know assess ourselves. And then if we do that, we can listen to all the feedback we get from others. We can listen to praise, and we can check up, does that praise apply to me? Do I have those qualities? Oh, no, yes, I have those qualities. Well, I rejoice. That's very good. That's very different than getting attached to the praise and feeling I'm so wonderful because I have these qualities. Is that coming across, that difference between that?
Really,
yeah, no, human dignity is very important. Being attached to an overinflated sense of who we are is poison. But you see, we're not going to get the dignity from the society. We have to get it from in here. Because if we keep looking for other people to give us our dignity, we are giving our power away. Okay? And we're not going to get it because, face it, if we don't believe in ourselves, the whole world could praise us and tell us how wonderful we are, and we still beat up on ourselves. So it isn't the society. I mean, of course we're influenced by society. But what I'm saying is if we want to do something with our life, we have to take the responsibility. Yeah, exactly. And it's not an easy thing. I mean, this requires years of going over and breaking old habitual thought patterns because we are all very well trained to beat up on ourselves. Okay? Yeah, but the way to change that habit is not by getting praise from the outside and getting attached to it. The way to change that habit is by looking inside and getting in touch with that very valid sense of human dignity, that immovable sense of human dignity that doesn't that just is there because we're a living being. Yeah? Okay. Now, there's a few different ways of doing it. One way, is, you know, at the beginning when we did refuge and the altruistic intention, and then we take the Buddha, who's a reflection of the Buddha that we're going to become, he comes on top of our head, dissolves into light, and merges, and that light flows into us, and we feel like our mind has merged with the Buddha's mind. To really sit there and feel that, and feel like, this is the future Buddha I can become, and this is now in my heart right now. Yeah. Why can't I feel this? Let myself feel this loving kindness for others. Let myself try on a feeling of generosity. And to really sit there with that light in our heart and just feel like, the future Buddha I'm going to become, I'm going to bring that into the present right now and be that. And you concentrate on that light at your heart. You let go of all your notions of who you are. I am this, I am that, blah, blah, blah. I can do this, I can't do that. I'm so horrible, I'm so wonderful. You let go of all of that. And then your wisdom mind appears in the physical form of the Buddha with a body of light. And your own loving kindness, you know, you're letting it be in its fully ripened form. And you're radiating this light out to all living beings. And I think it's a real incredible way, you know, through this kind of visualization and meditation, to really get in touch with, hey, actually, yeah, I can feel this way, and there is something good about me. Yeah? No, there's a lot of gray areas in between.
That's what I'm looking for right now.
Okay. Okay. Well, one of the ways to get to the gray areas, because we're at one extreme now, the reason I described the visualization is that you go to the other extreme, and then when you come out of your meditation, you're actually in one of the in-between. Yeah. Okay. Another way, I think, is just sit down and to think about what Buddha nature means. And there's a chapter in Open Heart, Clear Mind about that. And to think, what does it mean that I have the potential to become a Buddha? What does that mean? You know, what is this clear and knowing nature of my mind? Yeah. And what are these good qualities that I have? I'm not completely awful. We can look inside. There's a lot of good qualities there. And to notice those and pick them out. And they may only be this big right now, but the whole thing is, whenever you have a sprout has the potential to become a tree. So we don't need to put down the sprout because it's a sprout. We need to look at the sprout and say, wow, you can become a tree. So we can look at our own good qualities now and say, wow, look, you know. Sure, I might get angry and blow my top and have incredible bad mouth towards people, but I can talk nicely to people, and I do have some kind of kind heart, and that is there. And if I put the spotlight on that and stop beating up on myself so much, that thing might actually grow.
Yeah.
Well, the wisdom side, I think, is recognizing that this whole awful image we have of ourselves is a hallucination. Yeah. And that we have, through the process of all of our conceptualization, you know, put ourselves in this tiny little room and feel entrapped by the world. But it's our image of ourselves that has entrapped us. Yeah. And to say, this is just an image, I don't need to hang on to that. Yeah. Okay, I did bungle something as a kid, and I did get scolded, but I'm 40 years old now, and I don't need to act like a three-year-old. I'm not a three-year-old. Yeah. I don't need to hold on to whatever it was that happened. Whether it happened when you were three, or when you were 23, or when you were 43 or 83. I don't need to hold on to that because that was one event in my whole life. And it's not the defining character of who I am. Yeah. But we just kind of highlight certain things and then cast them in mental concrete. Yeah. And then fight against the walls that we've put around ourselves. And just to recognize, I don't need to do that. Yeah, when you start to see this judgmental mind coming, why can't you do this right? Why can't you do this right? Why don't you do this? You should do this. You ought to do that. Somebody else is doing this. Why can't you be like that? That whole mind, you know, like when you're doing the breathing meditation, why can't you concentrate better? Oh, why can't you sit, you know? And just look at it and say, be quiet. Or, you know, or just look at it and say, it's chattering away, but I don't need to believe it. I don't need to think like this. This thought is not me. This is just a thought going through my mind. It's not me. It's not even realistic. Yeah. And so just to be able to identify, it's this whole thing, to identify which of our thoughts and feelings are based on reality and which are based on hallucination. Well, the thought is an existent thing, but the object of the thought, what the thought is thinking, is not necessarily realistic. Okay? I mean, I can think about purple elephants. My thought about purple elephants exists. Purple elephants don't. Okay? So, yeah. Without being attached to material possessions. Well, because some people have a job that naturally gets paid money. Maybe some people inherit money. Maybe some people are the recipient of gifts of others. You could still, yeah. Well, okay, if you take the example, let's say, of somebody who's practicing to be a bodhisattva, you know, they may have inherited $5 million. That doesn't mean that in the very next week they're going to give all $5 million away, because they may want to spend some time and check out how best to give it so that it really becomes beneficial to other people. Okay, so they may want to take some of that money and invest it and use the interest to support a Dharma center. And they may take other of the money and just give it away to make a shelter for homeless people. Or to give it to, you know,
to a children's home or something like that. So just because you're unattached to it doesn't mean you get rid of it all of a sudden or that you just throw it away recklessly. Right? What to think about it. Let's just sit quietly for a few minutes. And I really encourage people, you know, think about these things in your morning meditation or your evening meditation. Put a note on your alarm clock that says, meditate. Yeah? Okay.